fun you're listening to Irish Radio Network USA. I'm delighted to welcome Marcy Norm Wheelor, Sinn Féin representative, South Belfast, Minister of Finance and Northern Ireland Assembly Executive, a very progressive publisher, author, and businessman who owns Belfast Media Group, which in turn owns the Irish Echo. He has served as the 58th Lord Mayor of Belfast. But today, firstly, I want to welcome you to the program, Marcy. You're very welcome. A sad week indeed with the passing of your good friend, Martin McGuinness, the Deputy First Minister of the Northern Ireland Assembly. Probably the most extensively covered funeral of indeed a great leader, but you might want to tell us about Martin McGuinness, starting from your own association and meeting up with him.
Well, Adrian, thank you for the very gracious welcome and introduction. Interestingly, I should start by expressing my condolences with Bernie, Martin's wife, and his family. And I know I would be speaking on behalf of all your listeners as well when I say that he was not only much admired by people of all faiths and all political persuasions, but certainly what I found that among the nationalist community, that he was really loved. And I have many comrades and colleagues in Sinn Féin and in politics. There's very few of them I would say that I really, really love them. But I really did love Martin McGuinness. And he had that power, I think, to inspire you and motivate you and win you over and give you comfort as well, confidence, inspiration. And I think that's why you saw such a dignified outpouring of love in Derry on Thursday at his funeral. I mean, there were certainly scenes that I had never experienced before. We stood in the cold from really 1 o'clock to 7 o'clock. I can't remember being at a funeral which took that long. I can't remember being at a funeral where you actually left the graveyard at dusk. So the Martin McGuinness, interestingly, and I said I don't know Martin McGuinness personally. Interestingly, even though you know he's someone that I feel such love for and such admiration. But we had a comradeship which goes back certainly to the 1980s. I came in Belfast City Council 1987. Very dark years, very troubled years, years of terrible warfare on the streets here. And my first engagement with Martin McGuinness was really trying to build the Sinn Féin movement. We were involved for the first time in councils, trying to work out how we could get through the difficulties and horrors and challenges of war on the streets, and yet build a political movement and achieve the aims of bettering the lives of ordinary people and uniting our country. And he really impressed me, and I realized immediately, and I think this many people would echo this, that when you met him, you knew he was a man of immense courage. And I would have been, I remember being asked by him to speak at a funeral of an IRA volunteer who'd been shot dead in County Tyrone. And at that time, there was really a battle going on in relation to funerals. Would the RUC, the British Army, would they allow IRA funerals to take place? And Martin McGuinness always led from the front. He was neither a fireside general, neither did he lead from the back. He was always at the front, and he always really exuded great confidence and calm. So you always knew that where he went, others would follow. And that leadership then was, I think, his cutting edge in peacemaking, that he had the same confidence, boldness, and really led us, I think, into much deeper into peacemaking and reconciliation than others would have. And for all those reasons, I think we're grateful. So for me, above all else, he struck me as a man of enormous courage, great principles and enormous courage. And I think that's one of the reasons why he probably befriended more people in Irish America than anyone else that I know, possibly the exception of Gerry Adams, but he really made an impression either.
You know, Martin O'Mueller, there are those who say that even within the Sinn Féin party, there were members who thought that in terms of negotiation and working towards the peace process, that he did not reflect on occasion the actual feeling of many within the Sinn Féin party who felt that he had made many concessions that perhaps did not measure up to the ethos of the party itself.
Well, I think that, you know, I suppose the art of peacemaking is that you take bold steps in the belief or in the hope that your opponent will also match those. And in fact, I think that happened when you look at the Tony Blair government, which negotiated the Good Friday Agreement, which was involved in much of the choreography after the ceasefires. You can see that the IRA took very bold steps, even, you know, still thinking of the act of decommissioning, that every weapon the IRA had destroyed in the presence of clerics who witnessed this decommissioning. That really was a seminal moment. It takes a lot of courage to say we're going to decommission all the weapons, but also it's a real no going back moment. And I think Martin McGuinness was absolutely pivotal in that. But the boys reciprocated. You know, you had, I think, at that time, a British government that was saying, this is the prize of our lifetime. This is a conflict going on hundreds of years. We both have a chance to show a different way. So, for example, all the IRA prisoners were released, and that was absolutely vital to build the peace that people who were in jail, really, some of the people would still be in jail, were all released by the year 2000. And I think you saw that same reciprocity in relation to the Queen of England, Queen Elizabeth, where, you know, these are difficult moments because she's also, of course, the honorary head of the British Army. But where Martin McGuinness, and I think you could see the friendship there and from their encounters. And then she reciprocated, and when she went to Dublin, she bowed her head in solemn remembrance of the men and women of 1916. She spoke in Irish. I think she understood, and her uncle, of course, Lord Mountbatten, was killed by the IRA. But I think she also understood this great prize of peace and of reconciliation. And when we had the reciprocity, I think people understood that Martin McGuinness was actually being strong. And when you are strong, you're able to concede more, to give more, because you know that the prize is of mutual benefit. I think that what happened, Martin McGuinness, why he called time on the executive and on the assembly, was because we weren't getting, and he wasn't getting the respect or the reciprocity or the partnership from the DUP or from the British government. And I think that's why he, before Christmas, he said, this isn't working, we're going to force an election, and then did that after Christmas in January. And of course, the response was on the 3rd of March, Sinn Féin got the biggest ever vote in the North in its history. It was that we actually, for the first time in 100 years, overturned the unionist majority in Stormont. So for me, it's I don't know if it's an irony or it's a poignancy, but Martin McGuinness, I think because he had been such a famed peacemaker and known for insisting that we go farther and farther and, you know, really show extend the hand of friendship again and again, that because he was such a famed peacemaker, when he finally said, this isn't working, we're not getting the reciprocity, people really rallied him out in unparalleled numbers. So And he used to say at our meetings at Stormont, he used to say, look, I know this is difficult, but I'm going to continue doing this. And he was talking about the peacemaking gestures. And he did, and we followed his lead, and it will be missed. And I do hope that the gesture of Arlene Foster going to the funeral, the leader of the DUP, I think that was important. And I do hope mm-hmm. that we, over the next 2 days, 3 days, Adrian, I do hope we get the awareness among the British government and the DUP, but I have to say, particularly among the British government, that if they don't get serious about this type of relationship we have, this partnership, that we are in for a very difficult period.
This coming week will present another challenge, well, actually two. On this Monday, 2 days from now, on March 27th, the parties must reach an agreement, with the British moving to distance themselves indeed from suggestions by Taoiseach, Prime Minister of Ireland, Enda Kenny, who made remarks and was very well received here over the St. Patrick's week. You know, he said that in principle he and Prime Minister Theresa May had made an agreement that direct rule from London would be off the table regardless of what happens on this Monday. What's your reaction to that?
Well, I think I would say, first of all, I do believe America and Irish America is moving center stage again. President Clinton spoke very movingly, I thought, at the funeral of Martin mm-hmm. McGuinness. His words, I think, were taken on board. The challenge he set isn't an easy one. To continue the work of Martin McGuinness and finish the work of Martin McGuinness. Peace is a process which goes on and on. I don't think in peacemaking you reach your destination is a journey in itself. But Irish America, I do think, has a role to play like that it hasn't played really in 20 years in terms of its importance and in terms of the pivotal moment that we're now at. And Martin McGuinness, interestingly, I once asked Martin, would he speak at an event in America? And I said, like, Martin, there's no doubt that in Irish America, you're so deeply respected, probably, you know, admired so much that, you know, there would be a great attendance at that. And I said, will you speak? I said to Martin McGuinness, Irish America listens. And he said, yes. He said, that's true. But even more powerful than me speaking is Ian Paisley standing beside me, or Peter Robinson standing beside me, or Arlene Foster. I don't know if it was this before she was elected, but he said Peter Robinson or Ian Paisley, when we speak together, it's even more important and it has even greater impact in America. So now, at this stage, I think we need Irish America to stand up for the principles that Martin McGuinness stood up for and called the election on. We also need the Taoiseach and the county to stick to his word and stick to his guns. We really do need the people who committed to the Good Friday Agreement in 1998, in that historic compromise, and central to that was the American concept of no back of the bus, as you know, and it was in Derry, the people of Derry know it more than anywhere else, because it was a nationalist majority city with a unionist controlling council because of the days of gerrymandering and discrimination. So we really need, I think, in these vital hours ahead, people to say the Good Friday Agreement said there has to be real power sharing, that everyone has to be treated with respect, that everyone has to be treated with equality, and that we have to have really institutions and a government people can trust and believe in. And I think that's what the Taoiseach was talking about, the agreements after Good Friday. The British said they wouldn't have the ability just to suspend the Assembly, that if there was a crisis, that they would work with the Irish government. And that's really what's needed. And, you know, the Taoiseach and the county has many of his own difficulties at the minute, but he really does need, like never before, to stand up and to say to the British government, this is an international agreement, that we are not just spectators. The recent votes vote against Brexit, where a majority here voted to remain in the European Union, and then the vote at the start of this month where the majority of people voted non-unionist. I mean, those are really crucial moments, and I think the Taoiseach has to stand up for them. But we're not asking for anything new, Adrian, and I think Irish America understands this. We're saying agreements were made, and they weren't honoured, and they weren't honoured by the DUP, and they weren't honoured by the British government. And I think the Irish government really allowed things to drift on the basis that they're going to be okay, and it turned out, of course, it wasn't okay. And so now is the moment. And I saw many of our great friends in Irish America, like Richie Neal and Joe Crowley and others speaking, expressing their condolences on the death of Martin. But I think they also understand now is the time to really ramp up bipartisan Irish American support for a proper settlement here to ensure we can get the peace process moving forward again.
Yes. How real is the deadline of Monday to have the parties agree, and what will that actually mean? Is this a one-day event? What's going to happen on Monday?
Well, if you're Sinn Féin, it's an absolute deadline. There have been the election was at the start of the month. There has been plenty of time to engage. Some of the other parties, the DUP and the British government, haven't engaged as actively as they could, but there is an engagement taking place now. The decisions do not take days and days or weeks and weeks of negotiation. The British know that we're actually asking them to implement previous promises. For example, in 2006, they promised they would give the Irish language official status in the North. It's absolutely absurd, given that in 2017, in the city of Belfast, which Belfast is this wonderful Irish language revival, probably unmatched in the entire country, and yet in government terms, the Irish language doesn't exist. It has no record, it has no status in the affairs of government. In 2006, the British government promised in another solemn agreement, a standards agreement, that they would introduce an Irish Language Act. That hasn't happened, and it's not just the Irish speakers like myself or my children or our neighbours, but it really is a poking nationalism in the eye with a stick and saying, look, really, your culture and traditions are second class, and that's what the Good Friday Agreement said wouldn't happen anymore. So Monday is a deadline, and there should be an extension to that. If the British and DUP are going to stop, it needs to happen now, and they need to give people what they voted for in 1988, the Good Friday Agreement, what they voted for since. So, and we travel in hope, Adrian, but it won't be easy.
The election obviously again showed a tremendous advance for the Sinn Féin party and a huge loss for the DUP. How does that translate in terms of the probably the most significant part of what Monday will bring, and that is to get the Northern Ireland Assembly up, going, moving, preferably before the beginning of the Brexit analysis and talks that are going to happen 2 days later?
Well, you mentioned Brexit, and I think this is an interesting period for Irish America, and Irish Americans are Republican and Democrat, and many, I'm sure, there's many perhaps support neither party, but it is an interesting time for the relationship between President Trump and Prime Minister Theresa May in Britain, because certainly in the north of Ireland, the majority of Republicans and nationalists voted to stay in Europe. An overall majority, 56%, voted to stay, but areas like West Belfast, it was 75-76% voted to stay. And Brexit is almost like a poison in the middle of the political process, because the unionists and the extreme unionists who voted for Brexit didn't do so on economic grounds. They did so because they want to see a hard border, they want to see more division, they want to see less contact with the rest of the island between the Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland. So those were political decisions. And of course, we don't want to be part of some sort of splendid isolation, United Kingdom, as they call it. We do want to have the type of unity we had under the European Union. We obviously want to have our country reunited, but certainly at the minute, there is no, if I drive to Dublin, there is no border. And if I'm involved in food manufacture here, I can have my products sold right across the island, right across Europe. So it is a massive disruption. Brexit is a massive disruption. And our problem is that the British government is saying there will be no special status for the north of Ireland within the European Union after they leave, and that has the potential, I believe, of disrupting and destroying the whatever unity we try and create over the next few days. So the having said that, it would be interesting to get the new assembly up and running because of the 90 members. It's a reduced size after the election. I think the election was March 2nd, in fact. It's a reduced size. But of the 90 members, 50 are what I would describe as progressive or non-unionist. So that's the Sinn Féin, SDLP, Alliance Party, the Green Party, and the unionists. And my mother's 87, Adrian, and in her lifetime, there has never been a unionist minority in Stormont, but there is now because they've really only 39 or 40 seats. And that reminds me of Belfast City Council, and you've been there with me, Adrian.
Yes.
Belfast City Council has been on a journey of change since 1997 when unionists lost their majority. And in that period, there's been power sharing because everyone has been allowed, it's been treated equally, and Belfast has changed enormously. So there is a potential, I believe, not an exact parallel, but there is a potential to have a much more open, generous, respectful type of government led by a progressive assembly in the time ahead. So that's a prize, but if we can't get the agreements we need over the next few days, I'm afraid we won't get a chance in the short term. At least won't get a chance to see how this new assembly would work. But one thing for sure, the new assembly has a clear majority against the type of Brexit that Theresa May is contemplating.
Yes. Now, you have mentioned now a couple of times not just the desire, but the necessity to engage Irish America now, not down the road a piece. And one of the messages that I think is coming across from you, and definitely now it's hard to imagine the late Martin McGuinness, was that there is and has been a role for Irish America. Many who feel that with the Good Friday Agreement and with peace in Northern Ireland, that perhaps their role is now to be there if needed. How do you get that message across that now is the time that Irish America is needed, and you know, sitting on the sidelines is not good enough?
Well, I think Irish America has been a guarantor of the peace. I also believe we're moving into a new period where Irish reunification, a reconciled people in a reunified Ireland, is on the agenda like never before. Not only because of the recent election and the majority, the loss of the unionist majority in the north, but because of Brexit and people saying, well, would we rather be in a united Ireland in the European Union or in this isolated so-called United Kingdom? And many people who are not necessarily nationalists are saying, well, look, I'd rather be in the European Union as part of a united Ireland, whatever shape that takes. And of course, that's always been the dream of Irish America. I suppose when I first really encountered Irish America, when I travelled to Pittsburgh with Gerry Adams in 1995, I believe, in 1996, it was clear that peace, that an end to the violent campaign, was a real wish of Irish America, a dream of Irish America, and that was achieved. And we have a peace. It's a fragile peace, but we have a peace. But the second dream of Irish America has always been the reunification of Ireland. And I believe that is back on the agenda like never before. We do need to have a referendum. There will be a referendum of Scottish independence. Mm-hmm. I believe in the next few years that may succeed. It lost the last time, may succeed. But there needs to be a referendum here as well, so we can have the arguments, the economic arguments, the social arguments, the political arguments, the peace arguments for a united Ireland, and people can have their say. And as part of that, I do think that Irish America, of course, American economic power, I think they have a role to play like never before. So this dual dream, if you wish, the peace, and I know that you know, it really broke the heart of Irish America to witness the killing and the loss of life here during those 30 years of conflict. But that second part of the dream, which is always united Irish America, that Ireland would be united, that the British would take care of their affairs in Britain, or the English would, but that the people of Ireland together would be sovereign. I think that dream is also within reach. So it's a double engagement. It's not just to make sure that the Good Friday Agreement is honoured and is implemented in the time ahead, and that is a struggle. But also, I think we are going to have an engagement around Irish unification that like we haven't had for many years. And it's no coincidence, I think, that the biggest study, economic study on the benefits of reunification was carried out by a North American academic who's based in Vancouver, Kurt Hubner, who says that the benefits would, you know, be enormous if we had reunification. So those debates are back on the table, Adrian, like never before, and I think that they're going to really light up in the time ahead.
Is it, would it be at least hopeful that on day one, next Wednesday, when the process of Britain leaving the European Union, that the welfare of Northern Ireland, you know, would be among the, you know, the primary negotiations. There are those who say that's not going to happen. They're bigger fish to fry.
Well, interestingly, the narrative from London and the narrative from Brussels are different. In London, and of course they had a terrible attack this week as well. But in London, the narrative is we are leaving European Union, and we're going to take the Scottish with us against their will, and take the Northern Irish with us against their will, and that's it. And look, we will maybe do something special for them, but they're going out. Theresa May refers to it as a red, white, and blue Brexit. Those are the British colours, of the British flag. And a red, white, and blue Brexit will be bad for the north of Ireland, bad for our economy, bad for peacemaking, bad for community building. And so there is no way, I think, that she can lighten the damage that Brexit will cause unless the narrative from Brussels. And the narrative from Brussels is we understand that everyone in the north of Ireland, 1.8 million, are Irish citizens. So that's absolutely unique, I mean, in European terms. 1.8 million of us are Irish citizens. Not, as you know, not all the loyalists are proud of that citizenship or wish to have an Irish passport, but there are many hundreds of thousands of people here, including many unionists now, getting their Irish passports because we are Irish citizens. So Brussels says we understand that's unique.
Yes.
Brussels also says we have spent 20 years building the peace. We have spent hundreds of millions of dollars or euro building the peace and making sure that peace blossoms. And so we're not going to turn our back on the north of Ireland now. And they understand that we have a land border like no one else has in the United Kingdom with another European Union state, which is, of course, the south of Ireland, the Republic of Ireland. So Europe is really understands the need for a special case. We're calling it a special status within the EU. And if we listen to the British Prime Minister, she says it's not going to happen. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think it's up to the Taoiseach and the Kennedy to say it has to happen. I think it's up to the Americans to say it has to happen, because it would be an unmitigated disaster for us in every way, but certainly in economic terms, to lose that support and that access to the European market. So I think it's all to play for. And when she triggers, when Theresa May triggers Article 50 next week and starts the process of disengagement, I think you will see more people, especially people in the border communities here who really don't want to return to those dark days of border posts. I think you're going to see a ramping up of the campaign for this special case. But we will have to we will have to bend the British on, because they are resolved not to have any case there. They are really in Margaret Thatcher mode, either, which you and I remember, and maybe not all your listeners, but Margaret Thatcher was famously said, you know, she was not for turning, and Theresa May is trying to emulate her. But, you know, we need flexibility and we need concessions in this regard in the time ahead.
The popularity and the world coverage of Taoiseach Enda Kenny and his great success in his visit to the White House, his negotiation and standing up to President Donald Trump, again taking that success, it would appear that the job is not finished, that he, in fact, and the Southern Ireland government needs to do more. And the primary reason for that is that it would be perhaps unreal to feel Britain is now going to focus on Northern Ireland, and in fact might say, well, let them cut their own deal with Brussels. We have, we have other things to settle here. Why Enda Kenny and why the Taoiseach is needed to step up now is paramount. But tell us what it is that you expect from the Taoiseach, and what should he be doing, and should that have to happen in the next few days?
Well, I think it does. I'm not naive. As you know, there is bitter enmity, political enmity between Sinn Féin and the Taoiseach's party, Fine Gael.
Yes.
In the south of Ireland, they're competing for votes. They're in the Parliament together, where Sinn Féin has been scathing about the government's record. So it's on the difficulties for the Taoiseach, because sometimes I think when he looks at the North, he says, well, the dominant nationalist party who are asking me to act decisively are my political rivals. But I do think it's a time to put the national interest first. The Taoiseach needs to be our ally, our advocate, our ambassador. He needs to really stand up like never before to the British government. He needs to say that if they don't honour international agreements, which the Irish government is a co-signatory to, that there will be consequences. And for too long, it has been the case that the Irish government has really been trying to keep a lid on things, softly.
Yeah.
Steady as it goes, it will be all right on the night. And of course, it hasn't been all right on the night. So I'm not underestimating how difficult this will be for the Taoiseach and for his government, but they really do need to build on this wave of support for Martin McGuinness's stance. I think right across the country you saw that outpouring of sympathy and respect for Martin McGuinness at his funeral. So there's an opportunity, I think, now for the Taoiseach to stay firm, and to really, for the first time really in many years, to say international agreements are international agreements. And the Brexit, of course, is causing huge difficulties for the entire island of Ireland, but also in terms of the peace process. You know, I'm an Irish citizen. I'm sitting in Belfast as we speak, but I'm an Irish citizen, and the Taoiseach needs to put the rights of Irish citizens first, and he needs to, I think, step up like never before. And we travel in hope on that. But, you know, I do believe that we're in a time now where we could obtain Irish unity, but at the very least, we need to make sure the British honour the promises they made to the Irish government and to the people of the North of Ireland.
The threat of the return of the hard border in Northern Ireland, many feel that, you know, that that's a red herring, that that's not going to actually happen. And it wouldn't happen, and you couldn't return to that. But what the reality of that is that if things don't change, that's precisely what's likely to happen.
Well, I mean, you can't have an exit from Europe and not have a border. And a border, by its very nature, is a hard border. And they can dress this up whatever way they want, or they can try and sweeten the soft in the blow, or sweeten the medicine. But if we exit Europe, in the way the Theresa May intends, which is unequivocal, which is really, even if there's no deal, she's still exiting, then it will cause damage. Just there has to be a border. Not only does there have to be a border for humans, for people moving across the border, and it's okay for the British government to say, well, we have a common travel area, but that common travel area doesn't apply to the French, doesn't apply to the Lithuanians, doesn't apply to the Poles. So what happens when they come to the border? Who's going to check that? Where does this hard border exist? But as well as that, Adrian, even worse is the damage it's doing to the economy and to the agri-foods industry, because 90% of the milk in the north is brought across the border to be processed. Now, you might find a way to say, okay, we'll deal with that through customs. It's going to cross every day. We'll apply the different rates of tax or duty. But of course, more important is that you're moving into the European Union's food area, where everyone agrees to the same level of food protection in the food chain. And once you're outside the EU, then that process has to start again applying for that, which can be cumbersome, which may not happen, which will be, you know, really, really disastrous for the pork industry, for the cattle industry, where cattle are moved from each part of the island to be slaughtered. Because you can't get out, once you move outside the EU standards of food to be in the food chain, then you have a completely different set of arrangements and deals to complete. So the border won't only be a physical border in my view, but it's going to really have huge disruption as you try and move people, goods, and try and trade across the border. So for all these reasons, we need, and there has been imagination shown by Europe before, there has been imagination shown and creativity shown, but we need an imaginative and creative solution which allows us to stay or to have special status within the EU. And failing that, then I do think people here are saying, well, then the only way to stay in the EU, the European Union, is United Ireland, then let's have a vote on that. Let's vote on our right to United Ireland, which of course would automatically, as the Taoiseach has said, bring us back into the European Union.
Yeah. I'm sure there are those who would say that the assembly and getting the Northern Ireland Assembly up and running is paramount. And can we expect then that by Monday there will be that the Northern Ireland Assembly is in fact ready to go, and you know, by Tuesday morning we should have the re-establishment of the Northern Ireland Assembly?
Well, that could happen, Adrian, and we will move forward optimistically. But for it to happen, the British government need to agree to implement previous agreements. I mentioned the Irish language, but also in 2014 they agreed that they would find a way to deal with the past, to deal with the issues of legacy, and you know how fragile and delicate an area the past is and how the past can divide us. But the British made a promise that they would take part in a truth recovery process. And now they've backtracked on that, and they've used the old canard and card of national security to say to people, look, we're not going to tell you what happened to your loved ones and 45 years ago in Ballymurphy and West Belfast when people were shot dead by the British Army. And we're not going to tell you the truth about collusion and the Patfinucan killing and other killings and hundreds of killings. So the British have a big part to play. And the other thing is, of course, the British are really letting the DUP hide behind their petticoats. The British are trying to, whatever the DUP want, that's what the British are agreeing to, and that's I think a catastrophe, and that will be a calamity, and that's what they've been doing in recent years. The DUP and the British Tories are united like never before around issues like Brexit, around their values are very similar, and the British government has again and again appointed the Secretaries of State here, Theresa Villiers is the last Secretary of State and the new Secretary of State, who have really been cheerleaders for the DUP. And we won't have an agreement on Monday night unless the British resile from that and say, okay, we have made international agreements and we're going to honour them, and we're going to stick to our word we give rather than trying to revisit and change stuff and delay and obfuscate and obstruct. So I think we will stick at it right until the end of the day. I think the meeting of the assembly is at 4 o'clock on Monday. Mm-hmm. We'll stick at it as long as we can, with the goodwill, with a big good heart of this sort of, and we'll take the lessons and great generosity of Martin McGuinness with us as well. But if we stay to his principles, it means that the DUP and British government need to agree to implement the previous agreements. If they can do that, then we could have a good end to Monday. If not, then we're into, I think, a no man's land for a period.
Which would be disastrous. One other, and finally, I want to add that in terms of the Northern Ireland economy, instability at this point will definitely, again, we will be returning to reluctance of inward investment. And Irish America needs to, to perk up and to be supportive and to realize that, you know, there's no point in waiting to close the gate after the horse has gone. And this is real. This is not, this is not hype. This is extraordinarily serious and needs immediate attention.
Sir. Yeah, and I think we're enormously grateful for companies like the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, mm-hmm. Citigroup of New York is here, Liberty of Boston. So many other great companies are here, and they've put down roots here. They employ people, they pay well, they're great employers, they employ on merit. And we want them to succeed, and we want more companies to come in. But you're right, that this uncertainty, this crisis that has come about is not good for our economic image. It's not good for our investment image, and you know, the last thing we wanted to do was to be put into this particular crisis at the minute. I'm hopeful that if we can find a way through it, then we will have this strong proposition again to American companies. I have to say that in all the years I traveled to America, and I actually met some companies in Boston just before Christmas who are thinking of investing here, we always used to emphasize, look, you come to Ireland, the north of Ireland, small place, but by the way, you have access to the richest market in the world, which is the EU market, the European Union market with 500 million people. And that has gone, and that for me was a important part of our proposition, of our selling proposition, that you could say to these companies, that you're coming to an English-speaking area, high education, you will find a culture very compatible, it's a nice place for your key staff to come and live for a while or whatever. But also you have access to European Union. Now, unfortunately, we don't have that. And I do think the Irish government realise that they have a very strong card to play. They are now the only English-speaking state in the European Union. And that's a very powerful thing to say to American investors. So Brexit poses its difficulties to us, but you're right. A political crisis is not a time or is not an inducement for anyone to invest here. So we're very aware of the necessity of finding a solution and finding a way through. And ultimately, as I've said to many of my unionist friends in recent days, it's a small island. We're not going anywhere. They're not going anywhere. We need to find a way to share it with mutual respect for all, with dignity for all, and with equality for all. If we can do that, and that was the foundation of the Good Friday Agreement, and go back to the type of language President Clinton was using this week about legitimate griefs and about the need to move forward, I think we can, with the help of Irish America, find a way forward.
Martin O'Mullor, thank you, as usual, for shedding light on, on what is very important and in a very timely fashion. And whereas we have our own troubles and conflict here, many would say, like never before, we can't take our eye off the situation in Northern Ireland, which needs to be, supported by Irish America, and hopefully, from our lips to God's ears. Thank you, Martin, and okay, good luck.
Yeah, I mean, thank you, and thank you to you and Anya and the Irish Radio Network. I mean, the Irish American community and all its wonder and genius and skill is really the extra player we bring up, we bring to the stage, under every stage of the negotiation. So I want to thank you for the work you do, your great ambassadorship, and not forgetting about us, but standing shoulder to shoulder with us. I think together, and we've come too far. We've come too far. We've seen too much.
Absolutely.
We've suffered too much. We've struggled too hard to have this rolled back. So I think together we'll make sure that it is not, the clock isn't turned back. We continue to make progress. So thank you very much.
Thank you. And friends, you're listening to Irish Radio Network, USA. Martin, thanks for being there. Okay.
Eden, great to talk to you, and I hope I hope to see you in person soon.
Yeah, we're more than worried about, you know, what needs to be done Monday, Wednesday, in this coming week. And if it didn't do any harm to have, you know, Clinton there this week,
no,
either.
I thought it was very useful, and I don't know who thought of that.
It's
only nice to have perhaps more. But thank you for reaching out, and you know we have come a long way.
Oh, I know that.
Irish America as well. So
yeah,
it's just essential that actually what the British government is trying to rule us back. You know, to say we've just come too far.
Yeah.
I really think that we need to just keep our courage and stick at it. It may not be this week, but you know we will.
I know.
We will get it started, Adrian.
I purposely did not outline the great progress that has been made, because I think we need a bit of shock value to translate into. Yeah. I think that most Americans feel everything is hunky-dory, and we've got enough of our own shit to worry about here, and but we need to engage, and again, not try to get the horse back into the friggin' field. Make sure it doesn't, and we're with you, trying to get that to translate the need, you know, to Irish America is, it's there. We don't have to start from the beginning. It's there. We just have to point it out enough. Wait.